the way, my thanks to a listener in Petaluma's at Hey Art. Contact info. Here's contact info for the NASA client, climate scientist you wanted to interview. Dr. James E. Hansen at the NASA Goddard Institute for Space Studies. He's the one, all right. I really would like to interview him. There's something about a long-form talk radio interview in, you know, 3 or 4 hours. You can really get to the bottom of someone, and boy, wouldn't he be worth getting to the bottom of. He's the one colliding with NASA right now on what he wants to say and what they don't want him to say. At least that's the alleged difference. Pretty controversial, and that means to me that, you know, after a couple of hours of an interview with somebody like that, he wouldn't be able to help himself. He'd say exactly what he thought. Richard Tarnas, welcome back to the program. Your books are available. You're supposed to plug where they're available. Can you get them on Amazon, places like that?
Yeah, they're available on Amazon. You can also, you can just go to cosmosandpsyche.com. That's got information about it, and you can get it straight from Amazon, or even better, at your independent bookstore, which needs all the support we can give them.
They certainly do. Well, I do that. I'm a gigantic reader. I just read and read and read and read, though I haven't done it lately. Most of my life, and I'm sure that I will come right back to it, since it's such an effective way of going away, as it were. All right, I would like to go to the lines and allow the general public to ask you questions, all except for the one that will get them fried.
Okay.
So let's try it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Yes.
Hello.
Hello, this is Jim. I'm calling from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Art, how are you today?
All right, Jim.
Richard, and I say today because it's, I agree this is the only time of day when you could have this kind of conversation. I'm awed by the fact that we are having such intelligence in human conversation on a large media, considering all that we've gone through in the last few years, and the zeitgeist is such a prominent part of the way I think about the way we humans interact. And Art, I was actually privy. I was not part of. I was certainly part of the listening and the perhaps influence audience when you were going through those.
You heard it then. You heard.
Oh, amazing! No, yeah. I believe that's true. And I, you know, we describe. I'm kind of a functionalist in the way we think about God and how we describe God. And I believe that collective human spirit and the zeitgeist. Richard, I think you've quite intelligently articulated this on the air, and I'm just, you know, proud to have people talking about this in an intelligent fashion.
All right, so, do you have an actual question?
Yes, I do. Richard, you talk about the zeitgeist, and you've kind of countered, you know, Art, I know you've ascribed to the convergence, you know, the convergent validity of that, of the...
your question, sir.
My question is do you feel like the zeitgeist is a collective way of us describing our... I don't think we are separate in our...
You're not doing the question
part. I think I'm getting what you're saying.
All right, then take off with it, because he wasn't going to quite get it out.
I think what you're asking about is the zeitgeist something that we as individuals are so connected with that in some ways it overcomes the
yes.
sense of our separativeness as individuals. And
yes.
I think that's true. I think and there's certain moments that it becomes vividly true, such as, you know, on 9/11, when everybody is taking in this extraordinarily traumatic experience, and the world is as one, as it were. Or for a more sustained period, to take the 1960s, when just clearly something was in the air, and we all were participating in it, no matter, you know, where we were, no matter what side of the battle lines we were on. We were experiencing something that was could only be described, I think, as the zeitgeist.
Now, if you go to Princeton and you look at the graphs of 9/11 and then the graphs of many other world-class impacting events. And you realize that they started to go off the chart, in many cases, 30 minutes or more before the events occurred. I guarantee before you're through looking at the evidence, in my opinion, you'll have a chill going right down your spine, or you'll be saying, I knew it. Probably you'd be saying, well, I knew it.
It's something like, it reminds me of how animals, for example, are able to sense prior to an earthquake that something's about to happen.
Yes, indeed.
And
same thing.
The machines often aren't picking up anything, but the animals are. In this case, it sounds like Princeton's got some machines that are picking up on the zeitgeist in advance of any causal event that could otherwise be seen as being the factor.
Well, I love evidence, and boy, I'll tell you, it's hard to refute. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Thanks, Art. And good evening, Dr. Tarnas. I have your book in my hand, The Passion of the Western Mind, and I noticed in his introduction, Art mentioned your having been educated under the Jesuits.
That's right.
And having heard the ensuing conversation, I wonder then, induction would suggest that you were brought up a Catholic, not necessarily, but that's what one might...
No, I definitely, I came from a Catholic family. I was the eldest of 8 children, and I was Catholic right through high school, and my education, so then when I went to Harvard in 1968, that was probably the beginning of a more ecumenical, let's say, approach to life, but when I still have a great deal of regard for it, at the same time as a great deal of criticism of the Catholic Church and Christianity.
Well, I thought the 8 sounded kind of Catholic.
That's right.
Yeah.
But you had a question about Catholicism and the Jesuits?
Well, it stood out in the introduction to my mind, and the ensuing conversation suggested that there was a lot that may have lent weight away from the faith of Catholicism, at least potentially, and I was wondering how that might have occurred given your Jesuit background.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
You know, the Jesuits were very good at educating intellectual rebels. Galileo and Descartes and Voltaire were all Jesuit educated, and because they specialized in giving the students a variety of perspectives and studying, you know, both sides of questions and so forth. So they weren't. Basically, the Jesuits are the most liberal of the orders in terms of their intellectual approach. Now, Catholicism and Christianity are complex, institutions and religions. And while we're very familiar right now with their conservative and reactionary forms, and whether it's the Christian right or the conservative popes that we've recently had and currently have. But there's other sides to Christianity and Catholicism. I mean, for example, like Martin Luther King is a great Christian whose civil rights activism was totally grounded in his Christian idealism.
Uh-huh.
And I think just in terms of our discussion tonight, astrology was something that, say, as great a Catholic theologian as Thomas Aquinas, fully accepted the validity of astrology.
Well, I was about to ask, Richard, if you think that any past or present popes were to a large degree, and I'm not a Catholic, my wife was, but do you think any of the recent popes, or any popes at all, have been to one degree or another, influenced by astrology? In other words, is it alive and well at high levels in the church?
Well, there's no question that, I mean, the Vatican had court astrologers, just like every king and emperor did in Europe in the medieval and Renaissance periods. So if we're talking about that era, there's no question that they did.
What about
more recently? I wouldn't say that they do in the last, I would guess, I don't know, but I would guess in the last, you know, let's say century or two centuries that hasn't been true.
But wouldn't study and confirmation of what the Catholic Church followed in all of those days have been recorded and passed down as wisdom that you think would survive, even if not openly and publicly?
It's possible. There's a lot behind the scenes that we don't know about. So,
tell me about it.
But I would just guess that it's probably not played a major factor in recent centuries, though it played an enormous role in earlier centuries. But let me just
I'd be more suspicious.
You think it's around, like with Reagan?
I do indeed, sir.
You could be right. In answer to the question that the caller brought in, I think it's one enormous commonality that we need to look at is that between Christianity and astrology is that both of these perspectives look upon the world as being ultimately informed by a creative intelligence, whether you call that intelligence God or a cosmic mind. It ultimately is seeing a certain creative order to the cosmos, and that has a transcendent sovereignty. And in that sense, there's a great deal of commonality between Catholicism or Christianity and astrology.
Of course, there's potentially a gigantic difference between whether God did the creating or some other very wise intelligence did it, because we have this whole idea about an afterlife, and one would seem to suggest, yeah, and the other would perhaps suggest, well, not necessarily, or it wouldn't certainly offer the promise of it.
Right. Well, there's, there are differences, but the question of an afterlife is one that, I personally am very comfortable with the idea that after we die, that there will be other modes of being that are consciousness in one way or another will enter into.
I too believe that.
I don't think that the conventional Christian dogma about it, where there's just, you know, one form that it can go to heaven or hell, that kind of thing, I think is probably a pretty constrained and unlikely scenario. But I think the larger confidence that more is going on than we see in this lifetime is well taken.
Well taken indeed. All right. You're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Good morning.
Thank you, Art. Good morning, Richard.
Where are you, sir?
I'm calling from Ontario.
Ontario. Okay, yeah. Cool. Go ahead.
Richard, I was just curious.
I can hardly hear.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me any better now?
Yeah, I can hear a little better now.
Okay, I'll even do better. How about
that's
that?
Great.
All right, that's really good. So keep it at that level and rock.
Thank you. I was just, you know, I'm really of two minds on this, and I sense even in, and I'm not speaking for Art, but I sense in Art there's a little bit of split brain thinking in this, and which I'm following, and I might be wrong about that, but it seems to me that on the quantum level, when you said that, when this was mentioned, I feel that I tend to agree with almost the singularity, universality, you know, quantum mindset of how this is applicable. Mm-hmm. But then there's the science part of my brain, and it's not judgmental, it's just what I'm stuck with. There's the science part of my brain that says, can this be used in any predictive way? Is there a practical way to use this?
I'm with you. Yeah, I have the same question. in my
mind. Yeah, that's really my question, and thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
Yeah.
Sure, good one, too.
I think astrology is ultimately not concretely predictive, that it's rather archetypally predictive. And that's the big difference between, the way much astrology was practiced in the past and where much of our modern resistance is well-founded. I think any of us that are genuinely interested in understanding the universe with an open mind, it takes the encounter with this evidence and looking at it oneself, and not if I just heard somebody talking about it, I would be resistant.
How many of the supposed great intuitives, Richard, that described the future? And there have been many famous ones throughout the ages who perhaps in a language that would be difficult to read so he wouldn't get in trouble, did it, or in many other ways accurately predicted the future. How many of these guys do you think used, if you used astrology in the manner that you've described tonight, and you were very sharp, even brilliant, and you were sort of up on the politics of the world and the economy of the world and the trends of the world, and put that together with astrology, you could seem to be amazingly predictive.
I think that's right. But you're talking about also a different, the other kind of person that you're talking about has a clairvoyant capacity, an ability that's...
Or apparently so.
Yeah, there's an intuitive capacity that is different than the astrological perspective method that I've been working with myself. I would not describe myself as being clairvoyant or having that.
No, but clearly you can see how a person with just a brilliant person using astrology with everything else could appear to be, and would be, in fact, brilliantly predictive, accurately predictive.
That's right. Though generally they would be, I think, describing strong tendencies, likelihoods, rather than describing concrete, specific events that are going to happen in a kind of absolute sense.
Well, then one might want to put it in quatrains, for example.
That's right. I imagine that you were thinking of Nostradamus.
As one, yeah.
As among others, yeah.
Why not just fog it up a little bit? Because it gives you a little fudge factor.
Yeah.
But you still look as though you're right on, and in fact you are. So do you think that astrology was mixed in at that point, for example?
Yeah, there's no question. I think astrology in a more a divinatory or clairvoyant capacity were intertwined.
Richard, I wonder, I really wonder, what do you say to, the skeptics out there, the scientists who laugh at you and laugh at astrology and laugh at the whole concept of it? If you're, on a talk show somewhere and you're in a debate and you've got to come up with a snappy answer, what do you say?
I would say, in my case, I would urge them to look at the evidence that I compiled in my book, Cosmos and Psyche.
And they'd say, what evidence?
Well, and they haven't looked. their response is very much like when Galileo had his telescope, and the Aristotelian professors and some of the priests were unwilling to look through the telescope because they said they already knew what was out there, and so they weren't going to look through it. And that's not genuinely a very good scientific, it's not a genuine scientific attitude.
Don't disturb my vision with reality.
Exactly. And so I would just encourage them to have an open mind and to look at the evidence.
All right. Would have to do, I guess. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Hi there, Art. It's a pleasure to speak with you. I'm Brody from National Park, New Jersey, and I'm listening on Streamlink. I just had a couple of yes or no questions for your guest, and then one final question after that.
It'll be hard for him, but let's try.
All right. First of all, isn't it true that as with beauty, the meaning of the stars is in the eye of the beholder, Dr. Tarnas?
Say that again. The meaning?
Isn't it true that as with beauty, the meaning of the stars is in the eye of the beholder?
In part.
Okay. Well, that wasn't...
I know that's not yes or no, but that's like...
In part, okay.
Okay, let me ask you this then. Do you put any stock into newspaper or website horoscopes?
Almost going to get electrocuted, but yeah, I'll go ahead and answer it if you want, Richard.
I don't put a lot of credence in that. No.
All right. I almost pushed the button too.
If I could compare it to, our let's say that's like modern medicine's relationship to a snake oil salesman is the relationship of true astrology to your average sun sign horoscope column in a newspaper.
I was hoping by now they'd caught on to that, wouldn't ask them anything like that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Hello. Oh,
yes, hello.
Yes. My question, I hope this isn't out of the scope of your guest. I've been in and out because I'm working, but in regard to life on other planets, you know, we always talk about life in regard to what we feel life is. Isn't it fully possible that life means something else on another planet?
I'd say hell yes. How about you?
Yeah, that sounds exactly right. Hell yes. Terrence McKenna was a good friend of mine, and I think he was often on the show, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, of course. Terrence was on many times.
And didn't he say, I imagine he said something about an Italian restaurant?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, why don't you share that with the caller, because that was a great line.
The caller's gone. But, I mean, what an incredible human being he was.
Yes. We've lost both Terrence and John Mack in these last few years, the two people who were good friends of mine and were frequently on this show.
Been a great period of loss. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Thank you. I was fortunate enough 12 years ago to analyze 4.2 million birth dates in L.A. County and compare them with domestic violence, restraining orders, and divorce rates.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, I was on a voter fraud analysis. But
anyway, you came up with?
With a tremendous correlation between a lack of divorces and domestic violence, and I'm going to throw out some astrology terms. You can explain them. There's just three. When the woman's moon sign was either conjunct or trine with the husband's sun sign, there was very little domestic violence or divorce, and the same with the husband. It's very important in a relationship. You wonder why so many of these celebrities and your relationships don't work out? Because you can be sleeping with literally a toxic vibration. But it's more important to have the woman's moon sign compatible with the husband's sun sign and vice versa than it is to have their sun signs compatible. And you have 144, 12 sun signs, 12 moon signs times 144 arch personality types. You're only going to get along with 36 of them.
All of that was just on the tip of my tongue. Thank you very much.
that's a pretty massive study. It would be nice to see it printed up.
I bet you would. Do you collect that kind of thing? I mean, those underpinning studies that at least move you in the right direction?
I have been so focused on my own historical and psychological research that while I look at those studies, I don't focus on them in particular. And part of the problem with a lot of those studies is that, you know, I think there's a resistance of this kind of evidence to statistical analysis, because statistics, it's kind of, it's not unlike some of the other topics that you treat on this program, like the how are you going to statistically prove the likelihood of life on other planets or the existence of extraterrestrial beings and interacting with human beings, or I wanted to ask you this, your own experience, your conviction that there's some kind of life after death. These kinds of things aren't, I think, easily subject to to statistical analysis.
I don't know if they do a lot of surveys on these kinds of things. And
you can do a survey on how many people believe something, but can you do something? But I'm talking about just like you can do a survey on how many people statistically believe in astrology. But I was talking about the reality of astrology, or the reality of life after death, or the reality of extraterrestrial.
Well, it seems to me, though, that some of those studies with numbers like that couldn't do your cause any harm.
No, they. That's why I said it would be very interesting to see it.
To see the numbers.
Yeah.
Yes, on the international line, you're on the air with Richard. Hi.
Hi there. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Yes, I had to say Dr. Tarnas. I don't know. Anyway, go ahead.
I was wondering how comfortable Dr. Furness feels with the yogic ideas that a single human consciousness has more than one level, particularly in terms of subtle bodies such as the astral and perhaps higher.
I'm very comfortable with that. It seems, I think anybody that has done sufficient interior exploration would agree with that.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Take care, sir. First-time caller line, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Oh, hello. This is Sandra in Ohio. Art, you had mentioned something about afterlife and questioning that. I've been a professional astrologer and medium for 20 years with a sideline in biomolecular medicine and medical research.
Yikes.
Yeah, I know. I actually wanted to make a couple of comments and then ask your guest his opinion on those comments. First of all, just a general comment. Astrology seems to show energy structures, and then we have the opportunity to play within those structures and use our free will in that play.
Right.
That sounds good.
And then also, what I've found is that those structures act like a kind of a computer program in that unless we make free will choices, we seem to get a kind of a default of an old consciousness pattern on individual levels as well as group consciousness levels. Does that seem to make sense?
I'm not getting the default part.
Like with a computer program, you can type in your instruction or select A, B, or C, and if you don't make a selection, you hit the enter key,
you
get the default.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, then basically you're the unconscious puppet of the structure as you're.
Yes,
that's a good.
Yes.
You're very good at putting these things in clear, simple to understand terms.
Oh, thank you. Now the other what I was leading into is the whole idea of free will versus fate with what's coming up in the next few years. You mentioned the aspects about the T-square and the Pluto involvement with all of this. I won't get really astrological here, but Pluto seems to be very much involved in mass consciousness shifts.
Yes.
And like in the mid-60s, you had mentioned that 64 through 66, we had the Beatles coming onto the scene and the whole going from the 50s into the 60s, nuclear family, and then free will and free love and all that. And we have these Pluto aspects coming up now. We're looking at, I think, the potential to make some big changes. And if we don't do anything, if we sit back and kind of let things happen, it looks like we might get the default. I guess my question would be, how much, in your opinion, how much do you think we can make a change here in these upcoming, say, 5 to 10 years using those Pluto aspects?
Well, I want to be cautiously optimistic simply because I feel that a certain amount of optimism helps the game along in a positive direction. But if we get another very reactionary administration that essentially is blind to the need for making changes and keeps going in the default position, I think we will have little grounds for optimism.
Oh, boy, did your politics just come out and bite.
But don't you think the people, the citizens, that we can use that Pluto energy also to kind of work with that administration, work with it, as putting it kindly?
Yeah, absolutely. And we sometimes have to remind ourselves that if you go back to the 60s, even though we recall it with us having, you know, all this emancipatory energy moving towards freedom and rebellion and so forth, the presidents that were elected then were Lyndon Johnson and Richard Nixon. Richard Nixon in 1968 at the, you know, kind of climax of the counterculture. So the I think you're right to bring up the fact that there can be a difference between who's elected president or where the administrative power is versus where many individuals and even a very large part of the mass consciousness can move in contrast.
Well, thank you.
To the established power, yeah.
Before you go, are you sure you don't want to do the rest of the show?
Yeah, right, you're just right.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Wild Card Line, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Hello, Art.
Yes, sir.
It's first time calling here, and actually the first time I've tried.
Okay, and well, you've got a big cell phone echo, so you're going to have to get to your question pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm in a hallway.
Oh.
I'm on a cell phone, in fact.
Yeah, sounds like you're in a dungeon, but go ahead.
I was just wondering that, Richard, you mentioned that the moon has a power of the over the human being. I was just wondering, what kind of effect has that had in human history?
Was the question about
the moon? About, yes, the moon, and how much effect it's had looking more at all of human history. That's a pretty interesting question.
Well, the major historical epochs have coincided with large the outer planetary alignments, because those last for several years at a time, while the moon is something that it goes around the Earth every month, and every alignment of the moon lasts only a few hours. So in terms of the, you know, major historical epochs, the moon is a minor factor compared with the outer planets.
So we're like a very frequent sine wave in the whole in the bigger picture. But still, one can imagine the rest of the scenario just based on what they observe with the moon, because it's really radical from a human point of view.
That's right, and it's a constant presence, though it seems to more in terms of, you know, daily experience, it's something that affects more the moods of the hour, so to speak, rather than the zeitgeist of an epoch.
Yeah, got it. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hi.
Hello.
Hello.
I had a quick question about if you're born like in the middle of like right on the edge of two different like signs or whatever, does that have some sort of effect? Well, I'm not mean to ask like advice.
It's all right. Look, the question stands.
Yeah, that's what's called being born on the cusp.
That's right.
And yes, exactly. I mean, the astrological tradition has always held that you get a kind of participation from both the qualities of both signs when you're right there in the middle.
Huh. Sort of a split personality, you know, the way to put it.
Or a kind of blend.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Richard Tarnas. Hello.
Well, good evening. It's such a pleasure to speak with both of you. I'm a long-time listener, but a first-time caller. I'm also a professional certified astrologer through the American Federation of Astrologers and the Association of Great Britain Astrologers, and I cannot wait to read Doctor's book. Two points and a short, brief question.
We're coming to the end of the show, so real quickly.
I will be very fast.
Okay.
Art, manifesting, I've listened to you for years, and manifesting is all due to intent. And when your intent is pure, so will your manifestation be. And I hope you continue with the mass consciousness and educating people towards the pure intent.
There is no choice. It has to be continued with. It's just a matter of how we do it. Anyway, go ahead.
And then for a doctor, Michel Gauquelin was a French scientist who did statistical studies.
That's right.
For many years, and he has great statistics.
Yes.
On the various signs and what they're capable of. And my question is this. The moon is a timer, so are the slow-moving planets. We astrologers use them as timers. And Nostradamus used mostly eclipses and fixed stars. Have you yourself studied anything or done much investigation? Because we know that the solar eclipses and the fixed stars also play a major part in understanding astrology and how it works.
Okay.
Yeah, I think my research has focused on the outer planet alignments and also what are called transits to the natal chart. I believe that there is a great deal of value in studying eclipses, as you were saying. And you also brought up the Gokulant evidence, which is their research was quite extraordinary, using thousands and thousands of birth charts in a very rigorous way, and it has withstood numerous replications. So that's the one set of statistical quantitative method experiments that has stood up to time over and over again, and it stands as a kind of anomaly for the mainstream scientific community as it's tried to reject it, because it's very good science, it's very rigorously done, and has continued to be replicated.
Richard, have you noticed that through the whole night, because the show's over now, I haven't asked you once what happens when all the planets align? We'll save that for the next program.
Okay.
Richard, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on this extraordinary evening.
You take care, my friend.